I think we've been joking this whole time. Like, what we don't want to ever do is the, like, here's like two men tell you about abortion rights episode. And like, now we're doing it though, because like, then do talk about politics.
Hey everyone, you're listening to a free preview of the Politics Podcast. We're going to talk about public opinion this week about how people form it and what they believe or tell themselves they believe. And we're going to use that to probe the questions of whether Democrats can change public opinion on a small number of pivotal issues like abortion between now and November, sort of given how public opinion takes shape and how Democrats tend to approach politics. So we hope you enjoy the conversation. And if you want to hear more about how we view beach paradise getaways, you can upgrade your subscription to paid at politics.fm. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Politics Podcast. I'm Brian Boitler.
I'm Matthew Iglesias.
Peek behind the curtain. I'm recording this about 12 hours after I got back from a few days away at a reunion that some of my friends from back home booked for us in Puerto Vallarta. And I came away from my time in the America.
You got like a suitcase of fentanyl to smuggle past Joe Biden's open borders here.
I went for the cocaína. It's just more my speed.
That is a little more fun. It's fine. Yeah, it is. My advice to the youths. you got in touch with Real America. In Mexico.
Western Mexican resorts filled with Americans.
You got out of a lot the Beltway.
And a lot of Canadians, but I didn't talk to any of the Canadians about American politics. Only a few of the Americans, only in passing, but it did leave me with a Thomas Friedman talking to a cab driver sense, a sort of frustrating view about how people who are not like Trump resistors, but also not really MAGA enthusiasts, have come to view the Trump presidency in hindsight.
Swing voters, you might say.
Kind of. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, like I am pretty sure that everyone I talk to will at the end of the day vote Biden or at least not vote Trump.
Unenthusiastic Biden supporters.
Perhaps. Yeah. I think these are like double haters basically. Yep. And basically, like, here's how I'd boil it down. Like, my general view and, like, any source of confidence I had in Democratic politics and the 2024 race has been that Donald Trump's unique liability is that basically everyone who doesn't really support him actually kind of despises him. So you're either the 40% of people who really like Trump or you're 55-ish percent of the country that thinks he's terrible. The data, I think, still mostly shows that's true. But the data also shows that he's becoming less unpopular, just a little bit, but that elections are turn on margins about that size. And so that means I think that there is some softening happening. And I think I was able to kind of detect what softening of that sort looks like. And like the people who I think are softening on Trump, like I think they're just kind of factually wrong about him. But their reasons for softening struck me as basically not crazy. They make practical sense and they're reinforced by a lot of like CW that you can find in mainstream media and on social media. Basically, like Trump was president, everyone said the world was going to end. And look, here we are at the swim up pool bar in Puerto Vallarta. Like we're all employed. Maybe we lost grandma to the plague. But like the world didn't end. And so I'm just less concerned about the possibility of him becoming president again than I was maybe 7 years ago. It was a brief vacation weekend, so I didn't stress myself out by trying to like too hard to persuade anybody that they were dumb or wrong or should look at the facts in a different, like from a different point of view. But like it made me think of like the challenges Democrats face going into 2024 in a slightly new light.
So can I just say, like, because I think we want to delve into this a little bit, but like I think this is an important point because it's something I've heard from a lot of people. I think it's evident in polls too, if you look at them. And I think that like there's specifics that one can take away from this, but like the really big picture thing that I feel like Democratic Party high command doesn't totally get about this and that they need to understand is that, you know, what you were talking about here is people who voted for Joe Biden in 2020, but who may not vote for him again in 2024, right? Like, this is the fall off Biden voter group.
Yeah, and I think so.
Right. I mean, more or less, right? And people who, you know, are their dislike of Donald Trump has waned away somewhat. And I feel like Democrats are obsessed unduly with like mentally processing this as like progressive discontent with Joe Biden. And that like they've got to see that like there is discontent with Biden from a whole range of directions. Part of the problem of actually being president is that, like, you can't be all things to all people exactly the way you can as a candidate. Like, some people end up disappointed. But that there is this very real thing that you were talking about, which is, like, people who, in fall of 2020, were like, Trump is doing a really bad job. I really want to turn him out of office and replace him with Joe Biden. Are now looking back and saying, like maybe I got caught up in some of the lib hysteria about Trump. And like now I'm hearing the same stuff from them again about like it's the end of the world, blah, 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 blah. But like he was already president. And like I know it's not the end of the world. And just like that is a challenge that you've got to face. You have to come up with things that will motivate people to rethink experience of Donald Trump. And like I think like reasonable people can, and I think we to an extent will disagree on like exactly what those things are, but like it has to be something other than just like redoing the grooves of like progressive coalition politics, because if you were deeply invested in those grooves, you wouldn't have this feeling about Trump. You know, it's just like if you're motivated by climate change, racial equity, whatever, like the list of progressive stuff is, then you definitely wouldn't be rethinking Trump, right? Like these are by definition people who either don't care that much about these big things or have moderate opinions on them, whatever. And it's like, they're looking back and they're like, Trump, and like things were okay. And he put out, I had heard a rumor from my sources in message testing that the most potent pro-Trump social media messages that they had found were just sort of man in the street interviews with sort of like random black people saying nice things about Donald Trump, that moved votes a lot. And I saw that Trump put out on Truth Social a compilation of exactly that kind of video testimony. And it was just like people being like, when Trump was president, we didn't have all this crime. And like that's not true. And another guy was like, when Trump was president, groceries were cheaper, which is true. And like that kind of stuff, just like pumping people up with this kind of like very low engagement, like Trumpstalgia is like a potent campaign tactic for Trump. And it's why the motion is with relatively disengaged people. Because it's like an incredibly stupid, both like the false and the true claims of that message are like really lowbrow. It's like, no, it's just like stuff was better in 2019. And like, was it? You know, I don't know. But like a lot of people feel that it was. And he's gaining a lot of traction just off of that.
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, it's like, I feel like the progressive issue suite problem that you have is almost like a sideshow to the whole thing, because that's the sort of thing I think we'd be discussing a lot more if Joe Biden was going to be running against like Nikki Haley. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly it'd be like, okay, like maybe the real stakes of the election are whether like the United States continues to make problems on climate change. For me, this was more about like, I thought after January 6th that Trump would be the kind of rare president that had no kind of halo effect after they like depart the scene. And like basically every president, including George W. Bush, who left office with everyone hating him, becomes a little bit less unpopular, a little more popular as time goes on. And I'm like, Trump fucked things up so badly. And in this sort of like, I'm going to try to steal the election I lost sort of way, that he won't benefit from that. And that was like a wrong instinct. But like, I think that often when people have that kind of retrospective, maybe things weren't so bad back then, view is that usually there's some kernel of truth in it. And I guess you could say like the kernel of truth is the grocery prices were lower. But like, I get the sense that like, it's mainly just that because of weird timeline syncing issues, he is not being judged by these people on the basis of like, he input this and the output was that, right? And so people are really unhappy about, I believe people remain really unhappy about our shared COVID experience. People are very unhappy about the new abortion rights status quo. People still don't like January 6th. They just don't think about it as much. I think people don't like that Trump is a swindler, even people who like are maybe kind of warming to him. But like, because he left office in January 2021 and abortion, the right to abortion disappeared in 2022, there's kind of like not a direct attachment in people's minds to the idea that that's his fault. And because like we'd kind of changed horses in midstream with COVID and people continued to die, even after Joe Biden became president, people are not thinking like, man, our COVID experience entailed much more suffering than it might have if Donald Trump had been a little more competent and a little less corrupt. And I was thinking to myself as I was there that like, if I wanted to like sit down with these people and like give me 30 minutes or 45 minutes, just a sustained amount of time to really talk from an expert's perspective, somebody who's just like does politics for a living, about like why their reassessment is rooted in kind of like factually wrong things, I think it would work. Like these people were not stubborn about their point of view. They were, if anything, like open to the idea that maybe their views on things are wrong and should change over time. But like it's a testament to I think both a problem with Democratic politics and an opportunity for Democrats that despite these huge demerits, like should be disqualifying demerits, he is not just by the numbers disqualified. Do you know what I mean? Like he's like likelier to win the election than not. And so I came back thinking like, I am just always kind of like Democrats, if there's an opening, go for it. And it's mostly because Democrats, I think often don't go for any opening. I feel a little bit after this experience, like the same, but I kind of hope that they just home in on those three things, like make people draw, like create the connection that you and I both know exists between Trump and abortion, Trump and the like threat to American democracy, and Trump to like put like the America's horrible COVID toll. And I think that would rechange people's minds. But then the question is, how do you do that?
Well, and so, I mean, I think the abortion piece, I think, is obviously very important here, right? Like, you can imagine a world, say America had 6-year presidential terms, right? And so then, like, Trump's elected in, when was he elected? 2016.
2016.
And then he runs a re-election in 2022.
When did Beau Biden die?
It's hard to say. I'm so old. 2014. It was, who knows? Trump has a 6-year term and he's running for re-election in 2022 in the wake of Trump appointed Supreme Court justices overturn Dobbs. Even let's like give Trump credit. Say inflation would have been somewhat lower with a less stimulative policy, but like there still would be some inflation. And the Dobbs effect, which we know was a big deal in 2022, just would have been rolling out in the context of like Donald Trump, the incumbent president, defending the decision. His, when Dobbs came down, they do a daily briefing at the White House, right? Corinne Jean-Pierre and whoever her predecessor was, if I wasn't so
Jen Psaki.
Senility had to answer questions from the press, right? If Trump had been president, his press secretary would have gone out and would have had to answer questions about Dobbs every day. Because Biden was president, he perversely got all these like tough questions, like, why aren't you using unconstitutional magic to prevent this bad thing from happening? And the secretaries would be like, we're doing what we can, you know, and there was controversy about it. But like, if Trump had been president, those would have been questions for the Trump White House. And he just would have gotten crushed in 2022, I think. But Biden was president. And so we've entered this odd quantum superposition where, you know, the engaged voters, the like Simon Rosenberg hopium kind of posts about special elections and stuff like that, the freaks who I love, who participate in special elections, they read articles about American politics and they think about what those articles say. And so if you read articles and think about their content, then I became mad about Dobbs because of justices who were appointed by Donald Trump. You then vote against that party, right? Yeah. And like Democrats do well in special elections. But sadly, America's less engaged voters who don't read articles about politics and don't think about it, they just like see something bad happen. But like Joe Biden was president and Trump is not like running ads that are like, it is good that I overturned Roe v. Wade.
Now he, but did he is saying it in the media.
No, he has said it, but he's saying it less now. You know what I mean? Like Trump is trying to wriggle away from. Mm-hmm. Like, there was just a court ruling in Florida yesterday that Florida's 6-week abortion ban is going to go into effect, but also there is going to be a ballot initiative in Florida about guaranteeing a right to abortion. I was talking to people who are involved in sort of pro-choice politics, and they were like, on the one hand, good, because we could defend the right to choose in Florida. On the other hand, bad, because running a ballot campaign in Florida is going to be very expensive, and now we need to spend a lot of our money on this. But on the third hand, good, because a ballot initiative in Florida, where Donald Trump lives, he will have to take a position on. He won't be able to just do this thing he's been doing for the past 3 months, where he's like, I don't know, maybe kind of, sort of, 16 weeks, who's to say? Like, you live in Florida, Mr. Trump. Like, are you voting yes or are you voting
he's
no?
He's gonna move to Bedminster because he's like, he can't move to New York because he hates New York now.
Well, I mean, he doesn't actually
have a house in Florida. That's a business. So he's gonna be like, oh, for legal reasons, I'm a New Jerseyan now.
There was a piece out yesterday. Mark Caputo, I think, wrote it. You know, longtime Florida politics guy, and it was like Trump put out a statement in which he reiterated that this is a issue for the states and for the people. He just didn't take a position, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, this is the structural issue. I would say the biggest one facing Biden, right? If you want to give somebody just like a one sentence summary, like what is a bad thing that happened as a result of Donald Trump's presidency that like you probably agree is bad, and it's the repeal of Roe v. Wade. Like, that is definitely Trump's fault, and it is definitely unpopular.
Yeah.
But, you gotta find a way to, like, hang this on him, right? Like, and I don't think it's fair to say that, like, Democrats haven't been trying to hang it on him. Like, they talk about this a lot. They are going to run a lot of ads about it. Trump is trying hard, though, to wriggle away from it. And, you know, the neutral media, whatever, is like not being super helpful on this. I feel like every time Trump gestures in the direction of moderation on abortion or just like tries to duck and cover the issue, he manages to get like credulous write-ups in the mainstream media. Whereas if Biden tries to moderate on anything, like the way the media works, if Biden tries to moderate, people just go on speed dial. Like, who is the most psychotic leftist I know who will blast Joe Biden for this? And they don't do that. Like, neither journalists nor right-wingers, like, play that game with Trump and abortion. And they just kind of let it hang out there that it's like, well, you know, like, we know Trump is not, like, a Jesus freak personally. right? And so like he just kind of projects these like weird vibes on it. And I think it's like, it's driving me crazy because like it's not true that abortion is a state issue. Like appointing Supreme Court justices is not an obscure function of the American presidency. The whole rest of the federal judiciary rules on these decisions. Availability of medication abortions is a question of sole federal competency. States have no role at all in pharmaceutical regulation or in regulating interstate package shipping. Like, this is a purely federal question as to, like, whether people in America will continue to be able to get medication abortions, which are the large majority of abortions and are an important safety valve in red states. Like, one reason why we have not seen the quantity of like tragic cases coming out of places like Texas that we might have is that the Biden administration is protecting people's ability to travel interstate, to ship pharmaceuticals, to get telehealth, things like this that like are going to go away if Trump becomes president, unless Trump makes a radical and unforeseen break with the base of his party. And like, it's incumbent on everyone to like really focus in on this, because like many things happened during Trump's presidency, but in terms of like durable shifts in public policy, like this is the big thing he did.
What Donald Trump typically does when he has no particular advantage on an issue or he's at some sort of disadvantage is like wave his hands and say, under Donald Trump, magic would have happened and everything would have been fine, right? This is like what he says about the Israel-Gaza war, right? Like that October 7th just wouldn't have happened if I was president, and then there would have been no war. And so, you know, like it was a disaster to elect Biden. And like on COVID, to the extent that it ever comes up, he will point out that more people have died of COVID since Biden became presidency than died while he was president, which is purely just a function of time, right? Like, as you said, if he had been president through 2022, the numbers would have flipped. It's just that, like, there was unnecessary toll in the early days because of his fuck-ups, and then Joe Biden inherited it, and people continue to die thereafter. With abortion, I'm not sure there's, like, a way for him to, like, he will try to dance away to the extent he can, but A, I think he's already kind of fucked this up for himself, and B, like the strategic ambiguity that conservative activists give to Trump, they don't give to the rest of the party.
Yeah.
So if, right. So like Republican leaders in Congress, rank and file Republicans in Congress have to remain doctrinaire about abortion. And they will just pretend that Donald Trump isn't out there kind of saying something totally different. And I don't think that that's tenable. Like it would be very quote unquote funny if Donald Trump tried to be like, Roe v. Wade got overturned on Joe Biden's watch, so it's his fault. Like, that's normally what he would do if he was trying to wriggle away from something like this. But I don't think he can, and that's why I don't think he's tried.
No, I agree. But what I do think it takes, though, from the left, from Democrats, that they don't always have the stamina for, is not only, like, aggression and attacking, which, you know, I think they will do on this. They have been doing. They've done well in lower key elections. They've won all these ballot initiatives. But is some discipline about not chasing every shiny object that Trump throws out there. You know, like if your strong issue is abortion rights and your strong argument is remind less engaged people that this is Trump's fault and that this is Republicans' position, like, you need to be willing to say to everybody that it's like, your thing can be whatever the fuck you want it to be, but like, we are going to live and die on the basis of our ability to drive attention to a handful of Trump vulnerabilities.
Yes.
And like, everybody else, like, you gotta like shut up or chill out or be a team player and like push this forward. And, you know, whenever it can't just be with the ads, you know, you can't just say, look, everybody's going to like let their freak flag fly like on Twitter and on television and in their floor speeches and everything they do, because like we're just going to run a lot of ads about abortion, mm-hmm. because people draw their inferences about what politics is about from like what people seem to care about, mm-hmm. you know? So like, you know, it's hard. It's like factually true that like crime went up in 2020 and it's been down since then. But like, it's also just like true that like in their heart and souls, like Democrats are not the party of being really, really mean to criminals. And it's like, it's hard to pretend that they are. But like Democrats really are the party of abortion rights. Like that's not fake. That's not just like something they cooked up because it's the more popular position. It's a popular position that they sincerely hold. And you gotta like, but you gotta be out there, you know, like all the time, relentlessly, and like not go chasing around after everything, you know, not let it fall out of the news.
I want to drill into this tactical question that I think you're dancing around a little bit, because generally I agree, and I think I might put it a little different, like. I don't think Democrats actually, like, as governors, as most members of Congress, as Joe Biden, have a problem, like, jailing criminals. I think the main issue is that for a lot of people, not you, but a lot of regular voters, crime is, like, synecdoche for black, you know? And Republicans are clearly the party of antipathy towards non-white people. And so they believe Republicans are sincerely more invested in attacking quote-unquote crime, right? And so, you know, it's just like something doesn't compute when Democrats try to point out, well, actually, our record on crime is better. Like, yes, true, but also I don't believe you, you know? So, and it would, you know, the same thing holds true, like, when Donald Trump tries to, like, outflank Democrats on the left on an issue like healthcare is like maybe some tiny number of people will be bamboozled by it. But I think generally speaking, like Republicans have coded themselves so heavily as being unconcerned with people's health issues that that nobody really believes them when they like point out that, actually like our record in blah, blah, blah is better than you would think. So like, the alignment on abortion is, I think, ideal. And it's weird because generally I think I'm like 100% with you that Democrats need to be more disciplined and more creative about making like high salient media moments happen with stuff like this. Like I definitely want Senate Democrats to bring Kate Cox and other people to testify about what Republicans did to them. And, you know, when that happened, I was like, Joe Biden should take Air Force One and go pick her up and bring her to safety. And like, you know, this is a slightly West Wing-ish fantasy, but also like, I think you could probably arrange something like that. And it would be a huge media moment and it would clarify things for people. However, it's weird because like I end up hearing from a lot of like Democratic staffer types who I think are trying to get me to sand down my critiques of party strategy or whatever. And they're basically like saying, why do you think we're going to spend $2 billion on the presidential election? And my point is always like, I think that a lot of TV spending money is wasted when the rest of politics don't have any correspondence to what's happening on TV.
Well, here,
here, I think they might be right, because Donald Trump can't help himself. And he said on camera, like, it's a miracle what I did with Roe v. Wade getting it overturned. That was me. So you could spend $1 billion on just airing that alone. And then the other thing is that like his method of trying to wriggle away from it, and this is something you wrote about, so that's why I wanted to end on this point, is that his thinking was that, you know, if I attach myself to the term 15 week ban or 16 weeks, I think is what he's going around saying, not saying ban, just 16 weeks. Like that will be the sweet spot and I can recapture the center. But because of what he's already done and what Republicans have done in his wake, now even that is a super unpopular position.
Well,
and so I think he's kind of fucked.
16 is fascinating, right? Because when Trump first started leaking his 16 weeks,
yeah.
I think a lot of us were a little bit like, what's 16 weeks? Because the issue, like a law that has been passed in some states and that has been polled extensively is 15 weeks, right? And so it was like, why did Trump go 1 week longer than 15.
7 minute abs.
Like what was
6 minute abs?
What was the point of that? And I think we got the news from a Fox poll, which I've heard, you know, confirmed in some internals, which is that 15-week abortion ban used to have majority support, but it doesn't anymore. And so that's why Trump tacked another week on. He's like he's looking for the safe middle ground that is retreating from him. And, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I wrote a post about shifting public opinion on abortion, and you see a pretty strong, like a long-term shift, right, that goes all the way back to 2011 or 2012 and is visible in General Social Survey. And that shows something which is not like a legal question, but just a moral question that the GSS asks, which is it morally acceptable for a pregnant woman to get an abortion for any reason that she wants? That used to be like a high 30s, low 40s position as a question of ethics, right? Mm-hmm. Separate from law. And it's gone up to be a mid to high 50s position.
Wow.
And it's been going up slowly and steadily, but
like I didn't know that.
For a long time. And you can, I tried to like decompose cohort and period effects on that. And it seems like young people are just much more enthusiastic about abortion on demand than people who are now dead, who were alive 20 years ago. But also that middle-aged people, people like us who were young before this polling shift and mm-hmm. are now middle-aged, have also become more pro-choice over time. The 15-week thing flipped much more recently, though. And I think, you know, I was talking to my friend Rachel Cohen about this, and, you know, she pointed out that what happened in Florida is that Dobbs came down, they passed a 15-week ban, it polled pretty well, they gained seats in the legislature, and then as soon as they gained seats in the legislature, they went around and they passed the 6-week ban.
Yeah.
Right? And it's just been the thing that pro-choice people always said. If you just ask them 2014, if you ask Mark Udall, what am I talking about when I base my Senate campaign on abortion rights? It's that all of these things that Republicans are proposing, these reasonable sounding restrictions and regulations, they are part of a web that is trying to make it logistically impossible for anybody to get the reproductive health services that they need. Right. And this is what happened with Alabama and IVF. Right. Nobody has ever written a law that says IVF is going to be illegal now. And nobody has ever given a speech calling for a ban on IVF. What they do is they say that an embryo has the 14th Amendment rights of a person at the moment of conception. And they don't like spell that out any further than that. But it just creates insurmountable liability risk that makes it impossible to run an IVF clinic. And in a post-Dobbs world, as these questions are becoming more real, I think it's just, you know, becoming clear to people that like that's what's up here. And any kind of abortion regulations that are coming from Republicans are they drive attention to the topic of abortion and abortion rights. And most people, you know, not in the Deep South, but like most people in most states, like think people should be able to get abortions if they want to, and that Republicans are trying to stop them.
Okay, wait, I have a question for you about the GSS data. Yeah. I have a question for you about tactics, mm-hmm. your view on tactics. And then I have a final question about resort preferences, beachside resort preferences. But I will ask you those questions on the other side of the paywall. And if you want to hear what Matt has to say about any of those things, you can go to politics.fm and upgrade your subscription to paid.